I don't even know why I'm here. I'm Cy Kellett, the host of Catholic Answers, but I don't know why. I listened to the show yesterday, Tim Staples, host and guest at the same time, and he was great. He doesn't need me. That really upset me. That really worried me, actually, for my job security. But I'm here, so you're just going to have to deal with it. Look at this sitting here on the desk, the phone number written on a piece of paper. What, Staples doesn't have the phone number memorized? Is that why you guys? All right, I don't need that today. 888-318-7884. And guess who's here with us for 2 hours today? The Cajun Uncaging the Truth.
What?
Carlo Broussard.
I guess Adam Minahan and David Niles got to you, huh, brother?
They did. As a matter of fact, they tweeted me and they said that I had to, not that I had to, but would I introduce you that way? Because they thought that that was the correct way to introduce you. And so I said, yeah, but if you punch me, then I was going to call Adam and have a talk with him. So, but that's how they introduced you.
That's how they introduced me. The Cajun Uncaging the Truth. Yeah, Adam.
I think that's going to stick.
Yeah, Adam and David were like, that's so great, man. Cy needs to introduce you like that. I'm like, hey, I'm not the boss. He's the boss.
Well, for those who don't know, Adam and David do the Catholic Man Show from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they run a radio station, and they're just great, wonderful Catholic men. We really like them a lot.
Great guys. I love them to death, man. Super good friends.
Their show does involve manly things like a review of gear.
They have
a man drink
and a man topic.
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody's cup of tea.
I feel like I disappointed them so much because I don't drink whiskey. So
I'm just a water guy, man. So yeah. I actually just went over there to spend a weekend with them and a couple of other couples to do a married couples retreat.
Oh, how wonderful.
At a house on Beaver Lake in
Arkansas.
Are
they all still married? Okay, good. You didn't ruin anything.
I hope not. And so we did the Catholic Man Show, an episode of it, out there on the porch. And they were out there with their cigars and their man drink. And I was just had my water.
Water and a skinless breast of chicken. Carlo Broussard is the Cajun Uncaging the Truth. Carlo is the author of a whole bunch of books, and he's the, he's an apologist here at Catholic Answers and one of the world's great, really fun, inspiring Catholic speakers. And I know you'll be out on the road doing that before too long again, in front of big crowds again, but you haven't been able to do that for a while. Carlo's first book was Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Then came Meeting the Protestant Challenge, which is a very, takes quite seriously Protestant intellectual challenges to the Christian faith and deals with them in a very respectful and intellectual way. It's 50
biblical objections to Catholic beliefs.
To Catholic beliefs is what I was going to say. Well, you interrupted me, but I was going to say.
You're going to have a super hard time with the subtitle on the third book.
The third one's easy. The third one's easy. Purgatory coming out. It's coming out soon.
Yep.
I don't have a date on it,
we don't.
So sorry about that.
I do not. Maybe they do.
And the subtitle is...
Well, it's actually... The main title is Purgatory is for Real.
That's what I meant. Purgatory is for Real. Oh, okay. I thought that was the subtitile. Sorry, go ahead. What's the subtitle then?
Good News about the Afterlife.
Good News about the Afterlife.
For those who aren't perfect.
Oh, that's a great subtitle. I love it. Good News about the Afterlife for people like me and Adam and David. What is it again? The Cajun Uncaging the Truth. All right, what are we going to talk about this hour? Well... We often talk about Catholic beliefs, and people will ask what Catholics believe. But also, it's the case that it's important for us to be able to defend why we believe certain things. So you can ask me, what is the Trinity? What do we believe about the Trinity? And I can explain that. And it's, you know, in all its mysterious grandeur, I can try to give you some hint at it, as I have some hint at it as a Catholic. But then the very reasonable question might come, why? Why do you believe that? I think the question is particularly urgent. I don't know how you would feel about this when it comes to certain moral issues, because people are concerned about the, wait, do I have to live that way? Why do you teach that? I think in order to accept moral teaching, we want to know why. Why does the Catholic Church hold that? So that's what we'll do today with Carlo, the whys of Catholic belief, 888-318-7884. All right, so the moral ones, of course, because... They can kind of...
Well, it touches home, right?
Yeah, behavior is one of those things.
Right. because if your behavior contradicts what the church teaches to be moral or immoral, right?
Right.
Then that implies that if you're going to accept the church's teaching, you would have to change your behavior.
Right.
And a lot of times that's very difficult to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of deep-seated habits that we develop through doing those sinful behaviors over and over again. So that is a hard pill to swallow for many. Of course, by God's grace, we can all achieve that reformation, right?
And yes,
turning our lives around by God's grace to conform our lives to the moral teaching of the church. A moral teaching that we can even know, the majority of those moral teachings that we can even know through reason alone, right? Such as the teachings concerning our sexuality, and, you know, the prohibition of contraception, the judgment that same-sex sexual activity is immoral, and those sorts of moral judgments many people have a hard time with. And so, you know, we have rationale behind that. You know, we're not asking people just to accept it by a blind leap of faith, right? That leap of faith can be based upon the revelation of Jesus Christ and the establishment of his Catholic Church. But also, too, there are reasonable grounds that we can stand upon in order to assent to these moral teachings. But of course, for many out there, it's not just moral teachings, but it's teachings pertaining to doctrine, right?
Yeah.
And what we must believe to be saved. Things pertaining to like God's revelation, right? On the you might call the speculative level as opposed to the practical level. Things, and I do not mean to say speculative in the sense that, well, they're not a part of divine revelation, it's just mere theological opinion. What I mean is just that which is non-practical, that which it terminates in the truth itself, such as the Trinity, right? Why do we believe in the Trinity? Or why do we believe in the Incarnation? Why do we believe in Mary's perpetual virginity, bodily assumption, the intercession of the saints, et cetera, those sorts of things like that. And there are many folks out there who want to know the whys behind those beliefs as well. And rightfully so. I mean, those are good questions. Why do you believe that? Because if an individual is going to assent to that, well, they need to have a rationale for that assent to make sure it's reasonable. You don't want to just have a blind impulse of the mind. And for many out there, of course, I know they're engaging in conversations with folks, and they're asked why, and maybe they're stumped. Maybe they don't know why.
Right.
And so they want a little help. And so we would invite them to call as well.
888-318-7884. If you have a why question about what us Catholics believe, whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to. Because as Carlos said, there are many people outside the Catholic Church who would want to know basic things like, why do you believe in God? Or why do you believe that Jesus is God? But there are many people that are our brother and sister Christians who want to know, like about your book. I hope somebody does ask a purgatory question, because I bet you're ready for it right now, having just written a book about
it. Well, that is sort of the number one topic that we get asked about, so we'll see.
Why do you believe in purgatory? You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. As I said, Carlo Broussard, the Cajun Uncaging the Truth, our guest this hour. So, there's been a lot of controversy around our current Pope.
Mm.
All right. So I'm not going to ask you why.
Brother, you just opened up a can of worms there, man.
But that seems like a basic why that's coming up now.
Yeah.
Why do you follow an earthly leader? That's how a lot of people put it. Or why do you follow this fallible earthly leader and not just follow Jesus? So let me start with my own why question.
Yeah. Why? So the simple answer to that question is because this particular office or ministry as the shepherd of the flock of God here on earth has been instituted by Jesus Christ. So if the question has to do with why do you follow this fallible leader, well, he's fallible in some circumstances, but infallible in other circumstances. And those infallible circumstances have to do with the divine aspects of the office itself instituted by Jesus, right? So we don't follow the Pope because he is a holy guy, or not follow the Pope because he's not a holy guy, or follow the Pope because he makes good prudential decisions, or not follow the Pope because he makes bad prudential decisions. We follow the papacy because that is an institution within the Church of God established by Jesus Christ that we find rooted in the New Testament when Jesus, of course, promises Simon to make him to change his name to Peter, which means rock, and to make him the metaphorical rock upon which he was going to build his church, giving him the keys of the kingdom, making him the supreme binder and looser of the church here on earth. And so it's that papacy, that role, right? And then, of course, in John 21, 15 through 17, making Peter the universal shepherd of his flock, tending and feeding his lambs and his sheep. It is that role that Christ established, invested with to Peter. And by way of extension, that role would be continued to be exercised by successors to St. Peter as the Bishop of Rome. And so that's why we follow the Pope, simply because it's an institution established. He's the leader appointed by Jesus, going back to Peter. So it's because of Jesus, it's our love for Christ that motivates us to submit to the Bishop of Rome, right, as our spiritual father and the leader of the Church of God here on earth, while at the same time recognizing that he's human, he can fall short of the standard of Christian living, he can fall short of prudential judgments, not everything he says is infallible, and we can make those distinctions, right? And that helps shed light upon our appropriate response to what he says, when he says it, how he says it, right? And so those are the proper distinctions that we need to make. And I think with those distinctions, that can calm a lot of emotions, right? There's a lot of emotional flare-ups that take place surrounding the papacy of Pope Francis there. But I think once those distinctions are made and we're thinking clearly, then, of course, our emotions can be rightly ordered and we can respond in an appropriate manner.
888-318-7884 is the number. It's the whys of Catholic belief today. If something in Catholic moral teaching, I don't know, say the Catholic Church teaches that nations need to follow the laws of justice when they go to war. You can't go to an unjust war. Maybe you want to know why. There's Catholic sexual teaching that people are quite familiar with. Catholic teaching about money. Hey, if you got money, you have to share with the poor. That's not a choice. You got to do that. You want to know why? 888-318-7884. And then there are the doctrinal teachings of the church, that God is three persons but remains always one God. The doctrinal teachings that Christ is the incarnate Son of God, that the sacraments save us. All these that we believe in the Bible. We believe in the inerrancy of the Bible. You're welcome to call with your question about why on any aspect of Catholic faith today. Carlo Broussard, our guest, 888-318-7884. Catholic Answers Focus is our favorite podcast, and it could be yours too. Find it at CatholicAnswersFocus.com. This week starts with two sorrowful feasts. So on Monday's episode, we asked Father Hugh Barber about why we Catholics celebrate sorrows. The topic seemed especially appropriate for 2020. And then on Wednesday's episode, we gave Jimmy Akin two simple tasks. Explain the Kalam cosmological argument and tell us whether it proves that God exists. Jimmy, of course, nailed it. Catholic Answers Focus is available wherever you get your podcasts. Right now, seriously, it's available. You can check Catholic Answers Focus.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
Tim on Facebook wants to know, why is my house having plumbing problems? No, that's not the kind of why question we're getting at with Carlo today. By the way, it's why questions having to do with Catholic faith. If you got a question about why do Catholics believe that? Why do Catholics hold that? Why do Catholics teach that? You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Hey, you can get free shipping on Carlo's book if you pre-order before midnight tonight. And that's midnight Hawaii time. We always give you till midnight Hawaii time on that. Just go over to shop.catholic.com. Purgatory Is For Real is the book, and you can get free shipping with a pre-order before midnight tonight. The Whys of Catholic Belief, Carlo, on Facebook, Patrick wants to know, why does God hide himself so that his existence is not known to all?
Yeah, that's a very good question. This has to do with the problem, what is known in the literature as the problem of divine hiddenness. And it's a great question because I think we can all sympathize with it, right? We all recognize that there are some people out there who are honest inquirers, and they simply have not arrived at the conclusion that God exists. So the question of why God allows or permits that ignorance or that erroneous judgment, right, is a bit of a mystery. But, you know, Si, I think we can shed some light on it. And if I may, you know, give a shameless plug for forthcoming product, a while back, you and I actually sat down and did a 2-CD set on the problem of divine hiddenness. And I know in
I was brilliant.
I know our publishing company here at Catholic Answers is working on that right now. I don't know when the product is going to be coming out, but I know it is in the pipeline here and will be coming out sometime in the near future. So I would encourage Patrick there on Facebook to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
But just real briefly, the light that I think we can begin to shine in on this mystery is to take a step back and ask the fundamental question of why is it that ignorance arises in the first place, right? And so it has to do with our human mode of knowing, just the way God made us as rational animals, and the way we come to know things is through the senses. Nothing is in the intellect unless it first came in through the senses. The mode of human knowledge is discursive, right? It's not like the angels where they have an infusion of knowledge immediately and they just know it. We have to reason through it. We take things in through the senses. Our intellect is abstracting the essences or the forms or the witness of things, right? That's called the act of apprehension. Then we have the act of judgment where we decide or make a judgment that thing exists in the real world outside of my mind. And then we begin taking different judgments that we make, putting them together, reasoning from one premise to another premise to some conclusions, right? This is all what we call discursive reasoning.
Yeah.
It's a step-by-step
process.
We have to work at it.
Yeah.
That simply belongs to the human mode of knowing. Now, God, in his infinite wisdom, saw that mode of knowledge as a good and a manifestation of his goodness, and consequently willed and decreed to have that kind of creature with that kind of knowledge. Now, notice, if God were to give us a grace to prevent such difficulties in reasoning, now, the point being is that with that natural mode of knowing comes the possibility to fall short of arriving at a true conclusion, right?
Right.
It gives rise to the possibility of error, intellectual error, concerning the conclusion that God exists.
Yeah.
So if God were to give us a grace to preclude those difficulties and to preclude any sort of intellectual error, that would be, namely that, a grace. That's something over and above our nature, which is not due to us as human beings. That's supernatural, right? So God's within his justice to not give us that grace to preclude all intellectual error and allow for some and permit some to come to intellect to make erroneous judgments, right? But it's still a good that God relates to us according to our natural mode of knowing. Now, so that's a little bit of light shining in the darkness there. Why does God allow some? Well, he's relating to us according to our natural mode of knowing. And that's a manifestation of his goodness, right? Now, if the next question that normally comes up is, well, what if somebody who is an honest inquirer and simply can't come and see the evidence for the conclusion that God exists?
Right, right.
Well, God's going to take that into account, right? If the person truly, interiorly is an honest inquirer, seeking the truth according to how he knows how to seek it, and is not responsible, and due to no fault of his own that he's come to the erroneous judgments, well, God's going to take that into consideration. And if his will is fundamentally ordered toward the truth and what is goodness as known by reason, well, then that could that could be a way, or that could constitute sufficient reason for God to give him the grace that could elevate his nature to participate in the beatific vision.
Yeah.
So this is a mystery of God's providence of creating an order of things, having a created order where he has rational creatures having the possibility to have intellectual error. That's the fundamental mystery.
Right.
Because God's not bound to create to begin with. And so God's not bound to create this particular order or some other order.
Right.
But God has willed this order of providence where rational creatures are permitted to fall into intellectual error. And of course, God can order that permission of error to some greater good subsequent to the error. But also, if we look previously to that, we can see the good of that order that God willed, because that mode of knowing, namely the human mode of knowing, which gives rise to the possibility of intellectual error, is a good and manifests God's goodness.
Patrick, thank you for starting us off. It's the whys of Catholic belief. Phone's full at the moment, but we'll work our way through them, and then we'll give you the phone number as lines become available. Adam in Lafayette, Louisiana, watching on YouTube Live. You are up next, Adam. Your question for Carlo Broussard. Adam?
Hello?
Hi, Adam. You're on the air with Carlo.
Oh, cool. Awesome. So I guess my question would be almost more of a comment. My brother's Catholic. He told me to call in. And so I'm an agnostic, and I was wondering what you guys think is the – I guess my position would be I don't find enough sufficient reason to believe.
Okay.
You know, I've heard a lot of the arguments. Went to Catholic school for 12 years. And yeah, I guess that's my position. I was wondering what, you know, your guys' sufficient arguments or evidence would be.
Okay. Well, Adam, first of all, thanks for the call, brother. And I'm glad that you're from Lafayette, man. Hometown, man. I grew up in Crowley. So I am a Cajun from Crowley, Louisiana, brother. So thanks for calling. It's good to hear from a fellow Louisianian, right? So, Adam, let me ask you this. You said you ruled out all the arguments. Is that what you said? It glitched a little bit when you spoke, and so I just wanted to make sure that, is that what you said? You ruled the arguments out?
I don't know if ruled them out would be what I would say, but I would say that that's a close approximation to what
okay.
I would think. I have watched, you know, a few videos on the arguments. I've dipped my toes into philosophy and
okay.
You know about like the structure of argument and
okay.
Stuff like that. And I've watched okay. videos on all the, you know, the different points of the argument and structure
right.
is valid. And then, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're familiar with, say, St. Thomas Aquinas' five ways. Are you familiar with those? Have you looked into those arguments in depth?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with Aquinas' way in his work on being in essence, the De Ente et Essentia?
So would that be one of the kind of like the contingency argument or?
Yeah, it's you might classify it in contingency argument in the sense that the argument in his work on being in essence starts from what we know by reason concerning things of our experience existing, that there's a distinction or a difference between essence and existence. Does that sound familiar to you?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's one...
I wouldn't say I've heard of, you know, essence before, but I...
Yeah.
I guess I haven't looked specifically into that one. I'm
yeah.
somewhat familiar with, you know, the cosmological, teleological...
Right.
Arguments.
Okay, well, this is a version... This is a form of the cosmological argument, because we're starting with things in the cosmos, and basically the very existence of things. So when I look at the tree outside... Adam, this is just a summary of the proof. I would highly recommend a book by a good friend of mine, Dr. Gavin Kerr, K-E-R-R. He's an Irish Thomist philosopher, and he has a whole book on Aquinas' proof for God from the De Ente et Essentia. So Aquinas' Way to God, I think, is the main title. You might want to look that up. But basically, a summarized version of that argument, Adam, is when I look at the tree outside, I recognize that tree, there was a time when that tree did not exist. There was going to be a time when the tree doesn't exist. And so from that recognition, Adam, I'm able to reason and analyze that and say, well, you know what? That tree can't possibly have existence by virtue of its very essence and what it is, right? Like, existence doesn't belong to what it is as a tree, like three straight sides belongs to what a triangle is, right? Because if the tree, Adam, had existence in virtue of its very essence, like it just existence was its very essence and that's what it was to exist, well, then it would always exist. It would never have There would never have been a time when it didn't exist, and there never would be a time when it wouldn't exist. It would just always exist, necessarily, right? But because the tree is corruptible, there was a time when it was not, there will be a time when it will be not. I know that existence doesn't belong to that tree outside in virtue of what it is, and so it's going to have to come from something outside of itself. And whenever we trace those causes, we come to a cause that has existence of itself. And maybe, Si, on the other side of the break, we can wrap that up. Sorry about
that. Okay, no, that's okay. We'll just take a quick break and we'll come back and wrap it up with our friend Adam from Louisiana. It's The Whys of Catholic Belief with Carlo Broussard this hour and next on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What is the Catholic form of marriage and why is it important? What factors may invalidate a marriage? What about the so-called exception clause for divorce in cases of adultery? In 20 Answers, Divorce and Remarriage, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you understand church teaching on the indissolubility of marriage while examining the pastoral and canonical realities for Catholics who wish to join together in marriage. 20 Answers Divorce and Remarriage is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Changes in life can be exciting and also challenging. Let's talk about how we can embrace change tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now we return you to more of Catholic Answers Live.
Hearing Jerry's voice there with Jerry and Debbie, I should thank Jerry, too, because he covered the show Monday. Jerry invented this show, so he there's no problem there. It was Tim that impressed me because I didn't know he could host and guest at the same time. There were no arguments between the host and the guest when Tim was on. Right now, we got Carlo Broussard here as our guest. Carlo, of course, apologist here at Catholic Answers and author and speaker extraordinaire. And we're talking with Adam in Lafayette, Louisiana, about why do we believe in God? And you wanted to continue your line of argument.
Yeah, Adam, are you still there, brother?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that break right there. So what I was trying to say is,
it's all good.
Okay, good. So picking back where we left off, we're looking at the tree outside, and I'm sure you would agree with me that the tree is distinct from nothing. So it's not nothing, right? It actually exists. So there's got to be something to the tree that distinguishes it from nothing. Otherwise, it would be nothing. And so, like, for example, St. Thomas Aquinas would call that a principle of the tree. He calls it esse in Latin, E-S-S-E, right? Which is basically the act of existence, or that in virtue of which the tree is distinct from nothing. It has existence. But as I was saying before the break, Adam, that tree can't have that principle in virtue of what it is as a tree, because otherwise it would always exist, right? If that existence belonged to the tree in virtue of its essence, there could never be a time when it was not, and there could never be a time in the future when it will be not. But obviously that's not the case. So Aquinas reasons, based upon that sensory data, that, you know what, these sorts of things like the tree, they can't have existence in virtue of their essence or what they are. So it's got to be coming to them from the outside. Their existence is derived from some cause outside of themselves. And so the next question, Adam, is, well, is that cause, whatever that cause is that, does that cause have existence of its very essence? Or is it deriving existence from something outside of itself? And whenever you begin to philosophically analyze that, you have to ask the question, well, can all things in all of reality be such that they do not have existence in virtue of what they are, like the tree outside? And whenever you think about that, Adam, you come to see that the answer is no. Because if everything in all of reality were such that they did not have existence in virtue of what they are, namely their essence, well, then no thing would exist. Because where are you going to get existence from? There would be no source from which existence could be derived such that these things are distinct from nothing. And so, therefore, Aquinas concludes there must exist some cause such that it has esse or existence of its very self by virtue of its own essence. So it would just be existence itself. And such a cause is what we call God. So to summarize it, Adam, you could say it like this. If everything were caused to exist, then nothing would exist. But things do exist, therefore not everything can be caused to exist. And that which is not caused to exist, not receiving existence from something outside of itself, it simply has existence in virtue of what it is, and it has existence in an underived manner, and that's what we call the uncaused cause. And that's very similar to Aquinas' second way. So that's his sort of a summary of his proof from the De Ente et Essentia. But Adam, I would also recommend, I recently published an argument for motion, taking St. Thomas Aquinas as my starting point, in our 2 issues ago of our Catholic Answers magazine print edition. So if you check that out, it may have been the July-August issue, I think. If you check that out, you can read that argument for motion. And then also for free, Adam, online, you can type in at Catholic.com in our search engine, Aquinas' third way. And I have a short piece there where I articulate how I think we should read St. Thomas Aquinas in his third way for the existence of God. And hopefully that might be of some help to you.
And Adam, we're going to have to leave it there because there, as I said, there are lots of folks on the line for Carlo today. It's the whys of Catholic belief. There are a couple lines open right now, 888-318-7884. If you want to know why we believe something that we believe, why we hold something that we hold as Catholics, you're welcome to call. Whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. We go now to Chicago, Illinois. Tom, listening to EWTN. Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Tom, your question for Carlo.
Hello, do you have me?
We got you, yeah. Tom.
Perfect, awesome. I wish you could queue up. I just came in as I was listening to the comment about we must give, we're Catholic, we must give to the poor. I almost wish I could hear you make that statement again, and it was an enticement for further debate, basically. Like, if you have a question with that, call in. So I did, because I have some thoughts and comments, but I wonder if you want to have your chance to ferret that out on your behalf first.
I would just like to say that I make those comments, and then Carlo has to defend them. That's how this works. So it was me that made that comment, and now Carlo will explain.
Yeah, so Tom, I think first of all, I want to draw a distinction between the principle of the matter that we must serve the poor, feed the poor in some form or fashion, right? And the concrete circumstances where we actually apply that principle. Because I think that distinction has to be made in this discussion. the principle of the matter is clear from our Lord himself. So as Christians, we look to Jesus, who teaches us in Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46, we see clearly that those who enter into the kingdom are those who fed the hungry. Lord, when did we feed you? Whatever you have done to the least of my brethren, you have done to me. Those who depart from our Lord, who say, depart from me, who go into everlasting damnation, eternal punishment, as Jesus says, are those who did not feed the poor. So there I think we have revelation from Jesus himself that in principle, feeding the poor is something that we are obligated to do as Christians, because doing so is an act of charity. It is a fruit that bears forth from that virtue of charity, in as much as we love our neighbor. And of course, we could appeal to James chapter 2, verses 14 through 17, Tom, where James teaches us that if we say we have faith, but yet we say to the poor man, be full, but yet we don't give him food, then James teaches us that our faith is dead and our faith is in vain and our faith is not alive and thus not sufficient to save us. So from our Lord himself and from the teaching of the apostles, as we see, for an example, in James chapter 2, verses 14 through 17, I think we can say that in principle, we as Christians must show love to those who are in need, and sometimes that need is the need for food. So that's the principle. Now, when we are to do that, in what circumstance, that's where it gets a little bit gray. Like, am I supposed to stop at this intersection here and now to give this poor person food when the sign says he needs food? Well, that's a question that, Tom, I'll be honest, I don't have an answer to. I don't know when's the perfect time that we must do it, and that if we don't do it, then we're contradicting Jesus's revelation that we as Christians need to feed the poor. I think in concrete circumstances, prudence has to govern that decision-making process. I mean, an obvious example is I can't give all of my money to the poor and thus take away from the goods that I have to provide for my wife and five children, right? So that's a clear example where we know in principle we got to feed the poor, but at the same time, the virtue of prudence must govern our application of that teaching of Jesus in concrete circumstances. So those are my initial thoughts. What do you think of that, Tom?
No, I think in principle, of course, those are wonderful arguments. They all make perfect sense. But I have a challenge for those thought out ideals and principles and how it's actually acted out in the real world. And here's an interesting challenge I don't think is brought up enough, because here in the West, we have things pretty darn good by human standards. The poorest of the poor live very wealthy. They're as wealthy. I mean, the poorest of the poor today live better than Henry VIII did, of course. So kind of zoom out big picture, the poor do exceptionally well. And the problem I have is that the people do not really, in general, have the capacity to, this is a real challenge for you, and I'd ask people to really contemplate this. The real problem fundamentally that complicates society, in my view, is the distinction and the problem of welfare versus charity. Because I think a lot of people hear what you say, that we must give to the poor, and we're like, oh, we offload that to the government, and the government's going to contribute to welfare. So we have a system whereby the government is an institution of coercion to take from the productive, give to the unproductive, or give to the poor, what have you. And it creates a really negative thing in society, such that we have a position where half of people work jobs, try and do the right thing. A lot of Catholics, right, like myself, I work a lot. The government takes half my money. I don't have as much money to be charitable with. And they give it by force to people on welfare, and those people, as a result, they're getting it secondhand. They don't have appreciation for those who sacrifice. It's kind of a lost in the shuffle. So people are really just automatons. They haven't got the capacity to be charitable because there's nothing voluntary. It's all coercive behavior. And that is a tremendous problem that I don't see the church ever addressing, the fact that I'd love to give more at church, but people don't need it because they're getting it from the government. And the mechanism by which that is done is all coercive. There's nothing voluntary. So I think that's an interesting challenge that really impacts how society runs. And people are just doing what, people respond to incentives, and that's about it.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Tom, that it is an interesting challenge, but once again, that's within the ballpark or the sphere of the application of the principles, and that's where you're going to have legitimate debate, and you're going to have arguments on both sides on how best to implement and actualize those principles. You made one comment that those who receive, say, government funding don't appreciate the sacrifice. I would just be a little bit hesitant in making that assertion because I think we can say with charity that not all do not appreciate the sacrifice of those who work their tails off, right, to provide for their families. Are there some? Sure, but not all. So I would just want to be very careful with that. And at the same time, I mean, you do have to take into consideration, once again, on the principle of the matter, the point of the government and the state is to order human life toward what is ultimately to what is good for human beings, right? To create an environment where the pursuit of virtue is an environment that is conducive to the pursuit of virtue. The whole point of government is to guide and lead its society and the members of it toward human flourishing. And clothing and food is a constituent of that human flourishing. So in principle, to some extent, the government should help to achieve that goal. But once again, how should the government help? And in what ways does it begin to cross boundaries of, as Tom suggests here, Cy, you know, coercing us to do that, sure, not allowing voluntary room for voluntary effort? I mean, that's room for legitimate debate. In what concrete ways does the government exercise its legitimate authority and operate within its legitimate boundaries? And in what ways does it go outside of its competent authority in demanding things of us? So, I mean, everything Tom is saying, I agree with.
But it doesn't change the words of the Lord, though.
That is correct. That is correct. So there can be legitimate debate in the application of the, sure, principle. And I'll be straight up with you and honest right here on the air that I'm not competent yet to engage in that discussion in order to determine which is better and which is not. I would need more research, more empirical data, more, you know, principled data in order to make those definitive judgments. But at least we can articulate the different spheres there.
Yeah. And one of the ways that Catholics have traditionally responded to the Lord's call to care for the poor is when those missionaries come around and they tell you about, you know, that mission that they're in and that they need a hospital or they need a school. Catholics open up. As a matter of fact, I heard when I worked at the Diocese of San Diego, there was no Sunday of the year that people gave more, you know, like more people come on Easter and Christmas, but people give more when missionaries ask than any other time.
And interesting.
And I don't think we should neglect that. That's a very serious obligation.
And that's
to support
a great example. That's right. That's a great example of how that's one way in which we can fulfill our Lord's command to feed the poor, although we can't go with our own hands
and feed
the poor in other places throughout the world or even in our own cities.
Yeah, but we should be grateful when the missionary comes, not Amen. Grumbling. And I'm sure Tom doesn't. Tom doesn't sound like a person who does. But we got to take a break, Tom. Thanks for the call. Right back with the whys of Catholic faith right after this.
We're here for you. Give us a call today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Happy to still have a job after Tim hosted yesterday, at least for now. I'm still working here and I love it. And I get to talk with Carla Broussard, the Cajun, Uncaging the Truth.
It took me
a second there. The Cajun Uncaging the Truth. Carla Broussard, apologist here at Catholic Answers, speaker and writer with the brand new book, Purgatory is for Real, coming out shortly. The whys of Catholic belief means if you have a question about why do Catholics teach that? Why do Catholics believe that? Why do Catholics accept that practice about anything that we do? Whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to call and ask. 888-318-7884. Alejandra in Vancouver, Washington, listening on 88.3 FM. You are next. Alejandra, your question.
Thank you for taking my call. My question for today would be, why do Catholics believe that human beings have or are in one unity, body, mind, and soul, as opposed to just mind and body? And this is coming from my teenager. I also would like to know if you can give me more resources to tap onto this, why do we believe that we have a soul, and how can we prove it? So,
yeah,
thank you so much.
But I just need to be clear on something. So the teenager believes that we only have a body, or that our real self is just a soul? Because many modern people are doing that second thing. Which one is that the teenager believes?
No, he believes that we have mind and body, and that the mind creates the soul.
Okay. All right, so Alejandra, first of all, it's important to give a clarification here that you will hear people speak of mind, body, and soul, right? But from the Catholic perspective, and I would add even from a reasonable perspective in the perennial philosophy coming from Aristotle, finding its climax in the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas, that the human being is a composite or a unity of body and soul. The mind is simply one, is a reference to that power of the soul by which we're able to know and understand reality and actually reason based upon what we know about reality and come to conclusions, right? So the mind refers to the intellectual power of the soul that's distinct from other powers of the soul, such as the will, the power by which we determine our action between A or B, and other powers of the soul, the powers of the soul that are dependent upon certain organs of the body, such as the power to see and the power to hear. So these are a variety of powers of the human soul. The mind simply refers to that intellectual power by which we know and understand things. So the bottom line is that the human being is a unity of body and soul, so that I, as a human being, I'm not just my body, I'm not just my soul. I, Carlo Broussard, as human being, am both body and soul, all right? And the reason why we know we have a soul is because we are distinct from inorganic matter. As St. Thomas Aquinas says, we look outside and we see that there are some things material that aren't living, other things that are material that are living. And so that, in virtue of which matter, a material thing is a living thing, we say it has a soul, such as a plant. The tree is outside, right? Even Fido the dog. And of course, the human being. These are living organisms. And so there's something to them, Alejandra, that distinguishes them from non-living things, right? And so that's called a soul. Now, there are different kinds of souls. Please hear me carefully. There are different kinds of souls. Plants have a unique kind of soul that allows them to have vegetative life, right? To take in nutrients and to grow. Animals, non-rational animals, they have a different kind of soul. They can do everything that plants can do, but they can do other things like see and hear and self-locomotion and move themselves around. Of course, we human beings, we have a soul as well, but it's a different kind of soul and a higher kind of soul, right? Because we have higher perfections and higher powers, such as our intellect and our will, the powers by which we know and love. And that kind of knowledge, the kind of knowledge that we have, Alejandra, as human beings, the ability to know concepts that aren't restricted to material boundaries such as love and justice and those sorts of things, and that we can know what a tree is independent of that tree outside or this other tree over here, that's a power that manifests to us that our soul has a power independent of the body in some sense and thus can survive bodily death. So this is just a summary of how we know that we have a soul and how we know the kind of soul that we have. What do you think of that, Alejandra?
A follow-up question. We're here saying that we Catholics believe that we are body and soul. And if somebody says, no, we're body and mind, how can we sustain or prove or,
right.
I mean, yeah, what my son is telling me is, no, we're body and mind, it's not soul.
Okay.
And he says, why are you referring to soul? So I think it's a very interesting question.
Sure.
Because for me, it brings a deeper understanding. And I understand what you're saying about living and non-living, but why do we believe that we have body and soul and not body and mind, for example?
Well, here's the thing. We do believe and do know that we are body and mind. The qualification is that the mind is that power, refers to that one of the many powers of the soul, right? So if you say body and mind, my first question would be, well, what do you mean by mind? Do you mean some spiritual immaterial power by which we can come to know and love? If that's what you mean by mind and reason things out, then we say, yeah, we're body and mind. We have that power. But our spiritual aspect of us is not restricted to that power because we also can love, right? And that would be the will. I know I said knowledge and love a while ago, but the mind or the intellect is related to the will because the will follows the intellect. So that's what I would say there, Alejandra.
Is this kind of like a scientific thing that he's saying the body just produces the mind is just a product of the brain? Is because a lot of young people are, I think, influenced by this kind of scientistic view of the world where science can explain everything and science says the mind is just a product of the brain and maybe it's even a evolutionary mistake. I mean, the people will go that far. Is that kind of where your son or daughter is coming from?
My son, yes, I think he's going into that. If there's any more resources, I would like to hear if you have any more books that we can go.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the go-to book, Alejandra, for you to read as well as for your son to read concerning this topic of the soul and its various powers and that the soul can actually survive bodily death and actually be immortal and continue to exist perpetually for the rest of its existence, you want to check out the book entitled The Immortal in You, The Immortal in You, How Human Nature is More Than Science Can Say by Dr. Michael Augros, and that's A-U-G-R-O-S, a fantastic book, Alejandro, and I promise you, you're going to definitely enjoy reading it and get a lot out of it, as well as your son.
The Immortal in You, that's Michael Augros.
That is correct.
That's Augustine Press, book. I think so.
He's not over at the Augustine
Institute. I don't know. We've had him on.
What's the publisher there? I'd have to check on him and see.
Okay. I hope you get that, Alejandra.
Ignatius.
It's Ignatius Press. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, Ignatius, listening out there.
Well, we're so confused about that, Carlo. People believe in this idea that this material, basically it's materialism and that the mind is a product of mere matter.
Right. And so that...
But that can't be.
That is correct. And that puts the debate in the... That puts the question in the arena where we're going to have to take a step back and give evidence for why there is an immaterial aspect to us. Now, the traditional approach following St. Thomas Aquinas is to look at our intellectual capacities and our way or mode of knowing in as much as we can abstract forms or essences of things from the material world, know them, in a way that's not restricted to material conditions or boundaries, but can go beyond them.
Yeah.
And so if we have a power that allows us to produce these immaterial concepts and to reason in a way that's not restricted to material boundaries, well, then the power is not restricted to material boundaries and thus is immaterial.
Yeah.
And of course, from there, we can reason to the survivability of the soul subsequent to death and its perpetual existence, etc.
Alejandro, thanks for that very important question. Hey, it's the whys of Catholic belief today. If there's something you know that Catholics believe, that Catholics accept, that Catholics promote, and you're like, why? Why do they believe that? Why do they accept that? Whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. More right after this.